We're holding on Nim Bays, Amr Aleph, the 10th line. We're finishing up the discussion of Nefula, the case where an animal, or most recently we were talking about a bird, has fallen from a height. In the case of a bird, we said it could even be that it falls onto something hard, like, for example, a tightly stretched piece of cloth or piles of different kinds of produce and whatever, and we have to define which ones are hard enough that can cause risuk evarim and can cause internal organs to be broken or crushed or damaged versus which not. So the Gemara continues. Dibuk. What happens if a bird gets stuck to a boar? What happened was that they would have, when they were trapping to trap birds, what they would do is they'd take a board, smear it with a kind of glue, and put some bait on it, and then when a bird lands on the board, then it'll get stuck to. And afterwards, if it tries to fly away, then the board is still stuck to it, and therefore it's going to fall down. It's not going to be able to fly, and it's going to fall down onto the ground. Or you might even have that it tries to fly away, and it ends up banging its body against the board itself. But it seems from the Rishonim that the concern is really more that it's going to fall off together with the board. So is there a problem of Nefula over there? Rav Ashi Shari. Amemar also said, Rav Ashi holds that it's still mutter in that case, Amemar holds that it's not. So the Gemara explains, B'chad gapa, if only one wing has gotten stuck to the board, there's no machlokas that it's mutter because it still has one free wing, so therefore it's able to hold itself up. So fine, even though the board is going to weigh it down, it's going to end up falling, it won't fall quite so suddenly, and therefore there's no problem. Ki pligi b'tre gapi. The machlokas would be when it's stuck by both wings. Manda also, so the opinion on Amemar that says that it's also on Malach. He's going to say, Hechinekum. Well, look, how is it going to be able to hold itself up? Both of its wings are stuck. Or Manda Shari, whereas Rav Ashi holds that it's mutter, on Malach, he's going to tell you, it can still sort of hold itself up by the tips of its wings so that it doesn't. So it doesn't fall quite so suddenly. Rashi defines for this purpose that the tips of the wings, Rashi defines, for example, with a goose, this is the area of the wings where you would cut off the feathers. So we're talking, I guess, for Pashtus, like the leading edge, whatever, you're talking about some part of the wings where enough of it is loose that it's not stuck to the board, that it would be able to hold itself up. The Ikadami, a different version of how the Machlokas goes, the other way around. Betray Gapi Kulamale Pligi, the Osir. If it was stuck by both wings, then there's no Machlokas, it's Osir, because then there's no way that it's going to be able to hold itself up. Ki Pligi Bechad Gapi, the Machlokas would specifically be if it was one wing. Mandashari, so the opinion that said it is Mutter, Omalach is going to tell you, like we said before, Efshad Deporach Bechad Gapi, because it's able to hold itself and prevent itself from falling heavily. It's able to do that with one wing. Well, Manda also, whereas a Mamer, the held that's also, would say, Kivin de Bahai, Le Mati Parach, Bahai Nami, Le Mati Parach, if it's not able to fly with the one wing because it's stuck to the board, then it's not really able to accomplish much with the other wing either, and therefore when it falls, it's going to fall very heavily and get badly hurt to the extent of Rizuk Evarim. Okay, the Gemara says v'hilchsa. The bottom line halacha is like that second lashon. Betray gapi also b'chad gapa shari. So it's also if it was stuck by both wings, it's mutter. If it was stuck by only one wing, so in other words, it comes out in the second lashon. That would be what Rav Ashi is saying. We have a usual rule that after the time of Rava, we have a usual rule in the Rishonim that after the time of Abaya and Rava and Ravina and Amema and Rav Ashi are in the generation after that, after their time, we have halacha kibasroi. The halacha is like the later authorities. So here, Rav Ashi is a Talmud of Amemar, and therefore the halacha is going to be like Rav Ashi, but like the second version of Rav Ashi, that with two wings they both agree it's also, and the machlokas is only about the one wing. Okay. So that ends the discussion of this case of Nafula over here, where the animal or the bird fell down and got injured. So that ends the discussion of what the situations are where it's going to be. When it's going to be treif, when you have to do bedika, etc. In Sichas Cholin they have a diagram of this case, and they show that the point that Rashi is describing, where you would cut off the wings off a goose, is indeed the tips of the wings. So in the first version, we're saying that even though the wings basically are stuck to the thing, it's still able to use the tips a little bit to brace itself. But we're saying that no, if both wings are stuck, then we don't say that. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said Nishtabru Rov Tzaleser. The next case of Treifus is where most of its ribs are broken. So Tana Rabbanan, Elohim Rov Tzalois. What does it mean? The majority of the ribs. So an animal has 11 ribs on each side. Now this is not necessarily the same as we would call them as a, first of all, before we get to that, actually, Rashi finishes off, Rashi rounds out this discussion of Nafula by saying he brings from the Sefer Halachas of Dolus from the time of the Gaonim that whenever all these cases where you need Bedika, then in earlier generations, they knew what they were looking for, but we don't always say that, so we can't be relying on that. On the other hand, Rashi disagrees with that and says, no, Ein lo dayan ela masha ein avroyis, a person as a dayan is entitled to follow what he sees with his eyes, so he has to be very careful. You have to be careful to bring all the shochtim and all the bodkim over there so that they have enough opinions that they can figure out what the actual situation is. But Rashi does not want to accept this point that in general we say with such things we can't require bedikta. The later poskim do bring that, the Ramah, for example, brings that point very often, that we're not expert at bedikta, so in practice we often end up following what the Bahag says about that kind of thing, and not being able to declare an animal kosher when it needs bedikta. But again, as we said before, if the animal is able to get up and is able to walk, then for sure there's no problem of nefila of risuk evarim, and therefore we're fine. Okay. Next, again, the Mishnah had said nishtabu roti tzaleser, if most of the ribs of the animal are broken. Now, anatomically, an animal has 13 sets of ribs. However, in the Gemara over here, we're going to describe that they were going to describe that the majority is 6 on each side, which implies that there are 11 on each side. So in other words, the idea is that there are 2 ribs on each side that don't count. One way of understanding it is that you have earlier in the Masechta that we talked about briefly, when you have the chozeh, the chest of the animal, which is one of the parts given to the Kohen, along with it, you cut off one rib from the front on each side, so then the Shach points out that it means that those ribs don't count, because those are considered part of the chest rather than part of the rib cage. Another way of understanding it is that you don't count the first one on each side and the last one on each side, because those are smaller, and there's a couple of different ways that the acronym discuss of how exactly we reconcile the fact that our animals seem to have 13 in each on each side in their rib cage with the fact that the Gemara is saying over here on the face of it 11. Okay, so the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Elohim Rov Tzalois, what do we mean by the majority of the ribs? Starting with the idea that there are 11 on each side. There is, interestingly, the Rebbe Gershom over here actually says in the Oza Ruah says that there are 23, but on the side over here it says it should really be 22. In any case, so if there's 11 on each side, so sheish mikan, so then if you have 11, 6 of them on each side are broken, or achas esr mikan, achas mikan, or 11 on one side and 1 on the other side, altogether you have 12 ribs broken, therefore that's enough to make the animal tereka. Which ones do we mean? So now where is the break of problem? All of that would only be if these ribs are broken on the half that faces towards the shedra, towards the spinal cord. So in other words, not the side that faces towards the chest. If they break, then there's not such a big then it's not such a big deal. Furthermore, this would only apply to the large ribs that contain marrow. So like we said, you know, really you have anatomically there are 13 on each side, but not all of them contain marrow, and we're talking about then only not the ones, for example, actually what it means is you have those 13 that make up the rib cage, then you have below that, you have sticking out of the spine as you go further down, there are little processes, little protrusions of bone on both sides of the vertebrae, but those don't contain marrow. Those are further down the back as you get back towards the tail. And we're saying those don't count for this purpose. We're only counting the ones that we usually think of as ribs. And again, even that, the Rishonim and Achronim are saying that we don't necessarily count all of the ones that are there. So the Gemara continues. Omar Ula ben Zakai. Omar. Okay, it says twice Omar over here on the side. It says one of them should go out. Anyway, Nekru. Now here you have a difference. Besides for that the ribs could break, you also have something where the ribs can get dislocated. So he says, Ula ben Zakai says Nekru v'roiv tzad echad. So no, if they're dislocated, then if there's most of one side, then already the animal is trefa. Nishtabru, but if they're broken, for that to be a problem, b'roiv shnei tzadim would only be if it's the majority on both sides. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, by the way, I don't know who this Ula ben Zakai is. We don't really find him anywhere else. We don't really follow him find him anywhere else in Chas, apparently, seems to be the idea. In any case, he says that Rashi says, so if we have the Gilsa with twice Omar, that means Omar Ula, it means Ula says Ben Zakai Omar, that Ben Zakai said, here's the din. So then it would mean that who's this Ben Zakai? We don't have him mentioned anywhere else. We have Reb Yechon Ben Zakai from a couple hundred years earlier, but we would surely call him Reb Yechon Ben Zakai then. Tosfos quotes it as Ula Bar Rabbi Zakai. So that would mean, okay, there's an Amora named Ula Bar Rabbi Zakai. Anyway, so he says that what it is there's a difference between whether they're broken or dislocated. So again, he says, Nekru, if they're dislocated, Beroiz Tzad Echad, then the animal is Trefa, even if you only have most of one side. So even if you only have six ribs are dislocated, then already the animal is Trefa. But if they're broken, and then it would be what we said before, you need a majority of both sides, then you would need at least 12 of the 22 ribs to be broken. Rabbi Yechon says, it doesn't matter, whether they were dislocated or whether they were broken, either way, the animal is trefa only if it affects most of both sides, so only if it affects 12 or more. Again, so the 12 or more doesn't have to be 6 on one side, 6 on the other. It can be 11 on one side and 1 on the other, but it has to be 12 out of the 22 regardless, says Rabbi Yechon. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omar Rav, Nekrat Sela, V'chol Ya'ima. Suppose that a rib is dislocated, and together with it, the vertebra that's attached to it also becomes dislocated. Within that, actually, you have the tour brings a machlokus in this connection between the Rashba and the Rosh. Would this din that we're about to say also apply only to the large ribs, the ones that we were describing them for, or here would this even apply to the smaller ones where you have vertebrae and not really full ribs attached to them? Would the same din apply? In any case, so Rav is saying that till now we've been talking about the ribs themselves getting broken or dislocated, but now we're talking about if the rib and the vertebra that it inserts into is dislocated, trefa, then the animal is trefa. So the Gemara continues, Amrilo Rav Kahana of Rav Asi L'Rav, so Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, who were Talmidim of Rav, they asked him, can you clarify? Nekrat selamikan, b'chol yekayem esmahu. What would happen if the ribs on each side of that vertebra get dislocated, but the vertebra itself remains in place? Would that also be treif, or would that be kosher? Amalahu. So Rav answers them like in a Rav answers them as a rhetorical question. You're talking about a case where the animal is broken in half. We learned earlier gistera is a word in Aramaic that means something that's broken in half. And we learned earlier in the Masechta, we learned back in the first parak that if an animal is made gistera, then it actually forget about shreifa, it's actually considered nevela. So Rav is in effect saying when you're talking about a case where two ribs have been dislocated one opposite the other, in effect the animal has now been broken in two. So of course it's treifa. Forget about treifa, it's nevela. So the Gemara says why? But Rav nami gistura kama. Why? Rav's case is also if you have a rib together with the vertebra that it's attached to are dislocated, what's the rib on the other side? What's going to hold it in place? It's held in place by being inserted into that vertebra. So Rav's case is also a matter of gistura. And the answer is kikama Rav tselabalei cholya, because Rav was actually talking about a case where the rib got dislocated, but the vertebra did not. So the spine stays intact, and just the rib became dislocated. In other words, Tosfos says, look, before we mention this point of gistera, fine, even if you're going to say that it means ribs on both sides have gotten dislocated together with their vertebra, maybe that's not enough to consider gistera. But when they're asking him about this case and he tells them what are you even asking about gistera, so his case is also gistera. So we're saying that no, what he means is if the rib got dislocated, but not the ribs on each side, but not the vertebra. So the question is, well, tzela v'chol yukama. Rav had clearly said the expression that he's talking about a rib together with its cholya. And he had said that the animal is treifa. So the answer is, tzela v'chatsi cholya. What he means is that the rib has gotten dislocated together with the half of the vertebra that is attached to. In other words, so each vertebra is a thing of its own, but let's say the vertebra itself has gotten cracked in two, and now you have one rib that's dislocated together with that half of vertebra, but meanwhile you have the other half remains in place and the rib attached to it. So then Rav is saying that that's treifa, but as opposed to if the whole vertebra came out, then in fact Rav would define the animal as nevela, not even treifa, even more so than treifa. So the question is then, in that case, then let's analyze what the question was. So then what the implication seems to be that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, when they asked Rav the question, they were talking about where the cholya, where the rib was dislocated without the vertebra. Because after all, they already heard him say the din that if a rib and a chulya are dislocated, then it's treifa. And they understood, based on what we just said, that chulya doesn't mean the full chulya, the full vertebra. It means half of it. So if they're asking on the base of that, so the question is, then now they have to be asking about when only ribs are dislocated, which we hadn't yet addressed. And Marsha points out, it can't even be that they're asking whether it's treifa or whether it's also nevela, because then why is Rav answering them that you're asking about gistera? Well, that would indeed be exactly their question. Are you saying that it's nevela? The fact that he's asking in such a surprised tone of voice implies that he understood them to be asking specifically about treifa, and he's saying, why are you even asking when a case like this is clearly nevela? So it has to be then that they are talking about where only a rib was dislocated, with beloy cholya, without the vertebra being dislocated. Amri is what they said. And he's still telling them in this surprised tone of voice, why are you asking them about gistera? So the question is, in that case, then why does he have a problem with that? Didn't we just say that Ula said that Ben Zakkai said that when they're dislocated, then it's enough that most of one side becomes treifa. Nishtabru, but if they're broken, then you need the majority of both sides. So we see, in other words, that less than that, it's not going to be treifa. So one on each side is certainly not going to be nevela. So in other words, So the question is, once we put together these various opinions, once we demonstrate that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi must be talking about where the vertebrae stay intact, so then the question is that Ula and Rav Yochanan are also talking about such cases. But now that it's clear they're talking about where no vertebrae have been affected at all, why is Rav calling it Gistera? Of course, Rav could be arguing with Ben Zakkai. But if we're saying that Rav is going so far as to say Nevela, so the Gemara is not going to assume that according to Ben Zakkai it's perfectly kosher, and according to Rav it's at the other extreme Nevela. So therefore, the Torah Schaim explains that's what the basis of the Gemara's question is. If Ula in the name of Ben Zakkai holds it's completely kosher, how could Rav go to the opposite extreme and call it even Gistera and call it even Nevela? Tosfos says a little differently that in Rav Kahana and Rav Asi's case that if only ribs are dislocated and already he would already consider it nevela, and we're going to have soon an opinion of Shmuel that comes into this over here that Shmuel is going to also say in the Gemara soon that it's not that there's no problem unless the vertebra is also dislocated. So therefore the Gemara is asking the question. So how do we understand Rav's Svara? So the answer is Rav will answer you. The answer is that Ula's case is talking about where they were dislocated on different sides, but we mean it's not one directly opposite the other. So you have one rib here, one rib there, and therefore so you need at least six of them to be dislocated for it to be Terefa. Hocha, as opposed to Rav Kahana and Rav Ashi's question, and Rav answering them, what are you talking about, Gistera? Is Zek Neged Zeh, is when you have one directly opposite the other, and then Rav would be saying that's enough, that those two already is enough to make it Gistera, and therefore to make it Nevela. So the Gemara continues, but why? Didn't we have also the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that says that even when it comes to them being dislocated, we just said before that he says most of both sides, of course, if you have a Rav Shneitz Dodin, you have to like Kaima Chadmina, Zek Neged Zek. And if you're going to have if you're going to have most of the ribs be dislocated, inevitably, of course, one is going to be opposite the other one. And we still see there's room for a question. He says that the reason is only because of Rav, not because it's one directly opposite the other. So again, how can Rav be saying that it's Nevela? Now again, of course, Rav is entitled to his opinion, but the question is still that it would seem to be a very extreme Nevela that according to Ula and according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's only at most, if you have only one on each side, it's not even Trefa. And according to Rav, we're going to go to the opposite extreme, and he's going to ask them, and he's going to tell Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, what are you going to ask me about a case of Nevela, implying that there's no other possibility when it seems that. So the Gemara answer is Hosam Buchna Bloy Asisa, because in Rabbi Yochanan's case, we're talking about where the buchna is dislocated, but not the asisa. Buchna and asisa is when you have a mortar and a pestle that you're grinding things and that you use to grind up spices or whatever. The buchna is the pestle, is a heavy piece of wood or whatever it is that you use to pound the things inside. The asisa is a concave container that you pound them in. So the Gemara is using that to represent then the buchna would be the bone, the rib, the end of the rib that inserts into a socket in the vertebra where that socket would be called asisa. So Rabbi Yochanan is talking about where the rib is dislocated, but the chulia has not been affected at all. So in other words, I guess you would have, you know, normally they're held together by ligaments. So, okay, you know, here you have the ligaments, the ligaments wasted away or something, and therefore the rib is able to work loose from the asisa. Hocha, as opposed to Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, is talking about buchna va'asisa, is talking about that both of them, the pestle and the mortar, both the rib and the socket in the chulia, have gotten dislocated, and the same thing on the other side. So all you have is the middle of it is intact, and Rav says that that would already be called Gistera, and it would be, you know, and it would be Nevela. Rashi uses the expression of here, Chatsi Cholya, a half a Cholya on each side, but it wouldn't not really half a Cholya, because if you have a half a Cholya on each side, then the whole thing is gone. So it means like about half of it, a little less than half of it. So the vertebra itself, let's say, has gotten broken and or is falling apart or whatever, and you have some of it on each side to the where the socket is, together with the rib that inserts into it, has broken off. Meanwhile, you have this part of the vertebra is in place. But Rav tells them that kind of thing would be Gistera, and therefore would be Nevela. So therefore, in other words, we can still distinguish between whether the ribs alone are dislocated versus the ribs together with part of the vertebrae, and therefore, and in the case where it's only the ribs alone and the vertebrae are still fully in place, then we would say that then we would say, like we said before, that then you need that. Then you'd have the different opinions of Ola, of Ben Zakkai, and of Rabbi Yochanan, whether it happens on the majority of one side of the animal, six ribs, is already enough to make a trefa, or whether you would need this to happen to 12 ribs. So the Gemara asks, "Hochi Heiner Derav." The question is then, if that's what Rav Kahana and Rav Asi mean, the case where the vertebrae have been dislocated together with the half of vertebra that each rib is attached to, then that's exactly the same din as Rav said. We just said before, a few lines earlier, that Rav says, "Nekrat sel of a cholya ima," that if a rib has gotten dislocated together with its half of vertebra, then it's trefa. So then, in that case, they'd be asking the exact same thing. And the answer is, lo shmi lehu derav. So they hadn't heard that din that Rav said, therefore they came up with this case, on their own. Well, the question is, v'livu minei kiderav. So fine, why don't they first ask the case where you have only one vertebra is dislocated together with the half of vertebra that's attached to. To be exact, actually, Rav's case doesn't make the animal Gistera because it's only one rib on one side. Even Rav is not going to hold it Gistera. They're asking about both sides, each one with part of the vertebra. But nevertheless, if they had heard that din of Rav, they could easily realize if it's already trefa in that case. They have no need to ask about where it's on both sides. But the answer is they hadn't heard that din of Rav yet. Well, so the question is, why indeed didn't they ask? So why didn't they ask that case of one rib? And the answer is, they hadn't heard either din yet. But savvy, they thought to themselves, liboy mine choda de parish lontauti. Better let's ask him one question from which we will get the answer to both things. In other words, it's always, you know, the Talmidim are asking their Rebbe that by all means they should ask all the questions they can, but it's better for them to think of a question that will cover the maximum ground, and that way, they're sparing the Rebbe the effort. They're sparing the Rebbe the effort of explaining a lot of individual details that don't need to be spelled out. We're talking very high level Talmud Chacham over here. We're not talking about stamina in a regular cheder or yeshiva or something. So therefore, you know, you want to make sure that your question counts, and therefore that you include that you have the question itself is going to get you the maximum amount of information. Let's say like by a press conference or something. You don't want to waste your time with a lot of irrelevant questions. So they think to themselves, let's ask one question from which we'll end up getting both answers. If we ask him what happens when one rib gets dislocated, well, then we have to consider what the possibilities are. So it'll be good if he tells us that it's trefa, then obviously if that's true of even only one rib, how much more so too? How much more so that two will be trefa? But if he tells us that with one rib dislocated, the animal's still kosher, we're still going to be left with the question, and what happens if there are two? So therefore, they figured, to begin with, let's ask him about two, and then that way we'll have all the answers. Well, that's the question. The Gemara says, how is that supposed to work? If so, if that was the thought process, then the other way around also. Honicha nami the kaboy mine tauti. Well, then it's going to work out very well if they ask them to hash nami the kaboy mine tauti. So now also, when they're asking to, what good is that doing? How is that covering them no matter what? Honicha yamaluk sheira. So it'll be good if he answers them that's kosher. Okay, well, if two is still kosher, how much more so one? Then how much more so one of them will be? How much more so one of them will be kosher? But if he tells them that's trefa, how does that help them? They're still going to have the question. Two is trefa. Is one also trefa, or maybe not? So why don't they? So either way, they ask him. They're still going to need to ask him two questions. Why? What's the advantage in asking him? What's the advantage in asking him about two, and therefore they can automatically deduce the answer to one? It doesn't work that way. It all depends whether he's going to say kosher or treif. And the answer is sabri. They thought for themselves that if we ask him about two ribs, then we're going to have like this. If he tells them that it's treifa, so how is he going to answer the question? They're going to see not just the actual words he used, but they're also going to see his tone of voice. If he answers them very, very straightforwardly, yes, two is trefa, then it would mean that would imply that one is kosher. But if he actually holds that one is trefa as well, imkain mirtach karata, then he would answer us in an angry tone of voice, because he would be saying, in effect, choda trefa tautim boya, if it's trefa with even one, how much more so with two? And that way, in other words, so if we ask them about one, then we have no way of knowing, because he may hold that two is kosher. He's not going to answer them in an angry tone of voice, because when Rashi explains, when would he be upset with them is if they ask a question which without them getting an answer, they might mistakenly be makel. So he wants to prevent them from coming to an Iser. So if they ask him about two, and he needs to inform them that one is actually also Iser, then he's going to tell them in an upset tone of voice, what are you even asking about two for? And they're going to understand from that that one is also, and they shouldn't think to be makel in it. But if they were to ask about one, there's no reason he would answer in a tone of voice like that, because what's the problem? Even if he does in fact hold that one is that one is treif and all the more so too, nevertheless he still wouldn't answer them in an angry tone of voice. He would still they'd say that one is treifa. It's true there was no reason to ask about two, but look, you know, you ask the actual question that you asked. I need to tell you the answer, and therefore there'd be no reason for him to be upset. So in other words, they're going to focus not only on the actual answer, they're going to also focus on the tone in which the answer was given, and therefore, when they were thinking among themselves, how should we present the question to Rav? So it came out that the best way to do it would be to ask them to ask about two, and therefore, from Rav's tone of voice, either he'll tell them that two is kosher, and automatically will understand that one is kosher as well, or he'll tell them two is treif, but he'll tell them it in a tone of voice that implies you had no reason to ask about two. And they would understand from that, from the subtext of that, that one is also treifa. So that's why they ask the question. That's why they ask the question in that way. Okay. So the Gemara says, "V'haka amulei." The fact is, they did ask him the question about two. V'loy rotach, and Rav didn't get angry at them. He answered them. He answered them with a rhetorical question. What are you asking about gistera? But we don't see that he got angry. So the answer is, yeah, given the Kamala who gives their Kamri to, I know Rishay. We don't say when Rav gets angry at them, doesn't mean he actually has to get like mad at them. It just means, in other words, he can be telling them in a tone of voice, like Talmidim, like you should be asking such a question. So when they ask him and he replies, what are you asking about Gistera? In effect, that's him telling them off and telling them, you know what, I expected better from you. I didn't expect you to ask such an elementary question. So therefore they do in fact get the full answer that in fact, yes, in the case of two, where it's one opposite the other, Rav would actually consider the animal to be Gistera and therefore Nevela, but they can also understand from that that they had that in a way they had no business asking about that, because because even one dislocated is already chafe, provided, as we said, that the half of vertebra together with it is dislocated as well. So in the end, that's the halacha about that. So the bottom line halacha is when ribs are broken, then as we said, you need to have at least 12 of them broken for it to be a problem. But if they're dislocated, if you have one opposite the other, or if you have even one of them, but together with the half of vertebra that's attached to, then already the animal is treifa. Okay. So now the Gemara brings a number of dinim that Shmuel said about treifus, one of them having to do with dislocated ribs. At the beginning of the Perek, we had Shev Shmaitza, we had seven statements of Amiroyim that describe various treifus that were not explicitly stated in the Mishnah. So now these are some of them. So first of all, Amar Rav Bar Shila, Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, Amar Rav Masna, Amar Shmuel, Nekret Selam Ikra. First of all, if one rib has gotten dislocated from its place of attachment to the spine. So that's one case where Shmuel is saying the animal would actually be treifa. So not like we've been talking about all this time that one rib dislocated in itself is not a problem unless the half of vertebra goes with it. Shmuel disagrees with that and says that even one rib dislocated is already a problem. The gogolus shnech besabaruba, and also if the skull of the animal was crushed along by injuries or whatever, by along most of it, and we're going to see soon how we define most. And the third thing is if the flesh, the peritoneum that covers most of the keres, which we learned previously about, if most of that is damaged, treifa. Then in all those three cases, the animal is treifa. So Shmuel taught these three dinim together. So here we were saying all this time that the problem is only when there's vertebrae involved, but Shmuel is saying as far as ribs is concerned, that even a rib being dislocated without anything else is enough to make the animal treifa. That's the point of Rashi. Tosfos says that no, Shmuel is not disagreeing with all the other Amoraim before. He is saying that when it goes together with the asisa, together with the half of vertebra that goes with it. So Shmuel is not another opinion that's even more machmer than the other one before, than the other ones before, but rather Shmuel would be agreeing with that it has to be the case where half a vertebra is dislocated as well. Okay. So let's analyze these dinim. So nekra selam ikra treifa, we're saying that if a rib is dislocated from its place of attachment, then it's treifa. Again, according to Rashi, Shmuel would be talking about even if all the vertebrae are still in place, and according to Tosfos, it would be only if a half a vertebra is dislocated as well. So the question is, uraminu, do I have a contradiction to that? We learned earlier in the parak that there's machloikas with Shama Basilo about the case of a human spine, where how much of it needs to be intact in order for it to be metame ba'oil, that it should be metame a person who's under the same roof as it. So kamachisod and meshedra, how much of the spine is how many vertebrae of the spine can be missing, and then it's not matami ba'oil anymore. But Shammai says it has to be that two cholyas are missing, two vertebrae are missing, and only then is it considered an incomplete spine, but one of them would still be considered complete. Or Basilolim cholya achas, and Basilol says one cholya is enough to make it be considered not intact. And the Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel became the Treifa. And Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Shmuel that they have the same machloikas as far as Treifas as well, which in fact we learned earlier in the Perek, that now if a Rav, for example, would be to, if a Rav were to paskin in one case, like with Shammai, and in the other case, like with Sillel, then Treifas, he would paskin, like with Shammai, for example, and say it's Treifa only if two vertebrae are missing. But meanwhile, when it comes to Tumas Nes, he would paskin, like with Sillel, that even one vertebra is enough to make it not mimetame, then we said such a person would be a Rosha. And if he goes the other way around, we call him Ksil Bachoshach Holach, a fool who walks in darkness, because he to be consistent. In any case, the point is that we see that even according to Shmuel, the problem is only if vertebrae are dislocated, not ribs. And the answer is, So the answer is because you have two different cases. There, here we're talking about where a rib is dislocated, but the vertebra is not. There we're talking about the other way around. A vertebra is dislocated, the rib is not. Well, the Gemara says, how would that actually happen? The Shlemet Selabale Choya, to have a rib dislocated without the vertebra is easy enough. It's very easy to understand. It gets pulled out of its place of attachment in the osissa, in the socket that was in the that's in the vertebra. How would you have that a choya gets dislocated and the rib that's attached to it is not going to fall out? And the answer is b'shili kafli. You can find it towards as you go further down the flanks, where you have again you have the rib cage, but then below it you continue to have a bunch of vertebrae that don't have ribs attached, or at least not things that we consider ribs la la. Again, you have these projections, these processes of the bone that stick out below the rib cage, but those we've been saying all this time are not considered ribs. So therefore, at that point, it's perfectly possible for a vertebra to be dislocated, and it doesn't affect the ribs. Basically, in other words, yeah, below the rib cage, you look at a human skull, you look at a human spine, or you look at an animal spine. So with humans, there's 12 ribs on each side. With animals, there's 13. But below that, you have there's still a few more vertebrae after that, which are still where again they have bones sticking out of them on both sides, But they're not considered ribs for this purpose. They're not considered ribs for this purpose in halacha. So the Gemara says Maskefa Rav Oshia. So Rav Oshia now has it. So in other words, that statement of Shmuel, that Beshama and Besol's Machlokas applies also to Hilchos Terefus, does not contradict what we said before, because in fact in other words, Shmuel's din, he says if a rib gets dislocated, the animal is Terefa. That would be, again, according to Rashi, even without the vertebra being involved, according to Tosfos, with it being involved, but then you have further down, and there, even one is enough to cause a problem, as opposed to below, once you get below that, then you have only if the vertebra itself is dislocated at the point where there's no ribs anymore, then for a person, it would be considered an incomplete spine, and for an animal, it would be terefa. Okay. So the Gemara says, Maskefa Rav Oshia. So Rav Oshia says, I have a more general question. If you're telling me that Beshama and Besil argue in both cases, both in the halachas of Tumas Mes and in Hilchos Terefus, and it comes out, therefore, that Beshamai is makel in the case of Terefus. It comes out what Beshamai is being machmer as far as Tuma Vatara, that only if two vertebrae are missing, is it not Matamim Be'oil? If one vertebra is missing, it still is. That comes out. Akula, as far as Hilchos Terefus, where according to them, if one vertebra is missing from the animal, it's not Terefa yet. So Rav Oshia says, V'listenia gabi kula Beshamai v'chome Besil. Why is this not listed together with all the cases where Beshamai is makel and Besil is machmer? We have a Masechta Edius, where it lists all the cases, and usually, of course, Beshama is Machmir. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that Beshama comes from the side of Gvuras, and therefore they tend to take a stricter view of which things can actually be used in service of Hashem. Beshama comes from the side of Chesed, and therefore their tendency is more defined that things should be mutter to be able to use in service of Hashem. But here it comes out, as far as Hilchos Terefus, you have an actual case where Beshama is Mekel, and therefore it should be listed in Masechta Edius, together with all the other ones like that. And the answer is Amalei Rav. So Rav answers him, or on the side over here it says it should be Rava. Ki itchel inyan tumah itchel, because the original question when it was brought to the Beis Medrash was as far as the halachas of tumah v'tahara, to have a look at Beis Shammai l'chumrah, and then Beis Shammai comes out being machmir. It is true that there does result from it a kula in the halachas of Terefus, but that wasn't the case that was actually brought up in the Beis Medrash the first time, and therefore, we don't count it as a kula of Beis Shammai, even though it's true, it does come out in that case that Beis Shammai is makel, but nevertheless, it's still not considered a kula of Beis Shammai because it wasn't originally brought in the Beis Medrash that way. The Bach points out that when the Rif brings these halachas, he leaves out this halacha about one vertebra being missing and we would actually hold like Rav Oshia, who apparently disagrees with Shmuel and says that in fact we wouldn't apply the same thing over here. We wouldn't necessarily say that if one Chulia is missing, then it should say that only that one Chulia missing is already enough to make the animal treif. Not necessarily do we do that. So the Gemara continues. The next thing we have, let's go through Shmuel's other dinim. So we said that we discussed this case where Shmuel talks about where one rib is dislocated. Now let's talk about Shmuel's second din. He said the gugulus shnech b'saber ruba. We said that if the skull of the animal was crushed in ruba. In most of it. So we have to define what we mean by ruba. Boy Rav Yemia, govha or rov hakefa. Do we mean the majority of its height or the majority of its circumference? So Rashi explains rov govha would be the area from the eyes upward that would be considered rov govha. So would we say that it's that area where if there's bruises and injuries on the skull, then already the animal's trefa. Or would we say, or does it need to be a larger amount? Rov hakefa, does it need to be the majority of the circumference of it? In other words, the idea is anything below the eyes is certainly not going to be a problem, because anything below the eyes is not really directly going to affect the brain. The whole reason why there would be a problem with the skull being injured would be because of the effect that it would have on the brain. So are we talking about then that just as long as most of the area above the eyes, which is in front of the brain, is damaged, then that's already enough to make the animal treifa? Or would we say that it means roiv hakefa, most of the circumference around it, which would be a larger amount? So the Gemara says take, we have to leave that unresolved. There's different understandings among the Rishonim, how exactly we define Roiv Govha and Roiv Hakefa. Are we talking about, So Rashi doesn't explain what Rav Hakefa is, he just says that it's larger. So the Beis Yosef explains Rashi to mean that, if it's any place above the eyes, so if we say Roiv Hakefa, then it would mean that the most of the way around the skull at that point, you measure from the eyes upward until the upper tip of the skull, and then that when Roiv Hakefa would be defined according to that. The Ran has a different explanation, that it means the hetef of the entire head. The Bach points out that he may be disagreeing with Rashi, because then he would say you don't just measure the part of the head that's above the eyes. You would have to actually measure all the way until the back of the skull, and that would come out a larger amount. So you have several different opinions among, and you have more opinions of Rishonim among that. And is it in fact so that we only consider the part above the eyes? Do we actually? Rabbi Gershom over here says that it means from the membranes around the brain all the way down to the mouth. In other words, so he would consider that the part below the eyes is also considered gugulus, and it would also factor into this part over here. In any case, the Gemara says take, or we can't be sure. So in either of those cases, then we have to declare the animal treifa. In fact, interestingly, the Rambam says when it was only one or the other, he says, v'yeroyli, it seems to me that we asked it. And the Kesef Mishnah says, you know, yeroyli is usually when the Rambam is saying a chidush. I didn't find this explicitly in Sfarim, but we have to be machmer on the safe side. Here, if we have a teiku, of course we have to be machmer. So he says because the Rambam himself holds that with other treifas, if you have a suffix on them, sometimes you can be nakel, but the Rambam would be saying this is not one of those cases. Next, the third din, we said, we said if the flesh that covers most of the keres is ripped through most of it, then the animal's trapha, which we said before is the peritoneum. So again, Boyer of Ashi, so of Ashi also has a question about what do we mean by the majority? Beroiv karua, do we mean where most of that layer is ripped? Oy beroiv notal, or do we mean only if most of it is missing? But if it was ripped, then it wouldn't be trapha. So the Gemara says, Tifshet Leim Midatan. Well, why don't Rav Ashi answer the question based on what we said before in the Mishnah? Keres HaPnimis Shenikva, if the inner keres has a hole, or Shenikva Reiva Chitzona, or if most of the outer layer of it is ripped. And Ba'amid Ma'arav, Mishmeid Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, we had before a whole discussion of what the keres HaPnimis versus Chitzonis is, and we had the opinion that in Eretz Yisrael, the name of Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, Kol HaKeres Kulo Zehi Keres HaPnimis, Zui Keres HaPnimis, the entire keres, the entire first stomach of the animal, is considered the keres apnimi, and in all of it, even a small hole will make it trefa. There is zero keres achitzona, and what is considered keres achitzona, bosar achoyfes reva keres, is this flesh, this the peritoneum that covers most of the keres. So then it comes out. So Rav Ashi has a clear answer to that. Yeah, if most of it is ripped, then it's trefa. It's not a matter of nital that it was removed. It's just a matter that it's ripped, and already the animal will be trefa. But the Gemara answers me. So now, okay, that's Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina. Here we're talking about Shmuel, but the Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Chanina would learn the same way. And the Rashba discusses why indeed we would think that. But the Gemara answers that midi hu taima elo l'Shmuel. Look, but the whole question that we're asking is only according to Shmuel. And the fact is, we said before in that sugya, Hachi Amar, Ha'amar, Rabbi Yaakov bar Nachmani Amar Shmuel, Makam she'ein by Melas, that Shmuel had given a definition of Keres HaPnimi that didn't include the whole Keres. According to him, the Keres HaPnimi was only the area where you didn't have the wool-like, the wool-like protrusions, the villi, that the little hair-like protrusions that stick out from the inner lining of it. So according to him, the keres apnimi is only the area where those don't naturally grow. And that area would be if you have a small hole at Strafa, and the rest of them would be only ruboy. So it comes out, according to Shmuel, in fact, we haven't talked at all about the peritoneum. We've only been talking about the keres itself. Well, therefore, so now the question can well be asked, according to Shmuel, if Bosra Choyfas, Reva Keres, is ripped, would it be Trefa? According to Shmuel, there is in fact room for the question, because according to him, we haven't really discussed that point at all. Next. Now we get to the last of the major types of trefas. So now we have the case of drusa. This is actually the one that it actually mentions explicitly in the pasuk. When it says don't eat meat that was torn in the field, so what that means, in other words, that a predator attacked the animal. And now we're concerned that it may have been injured in a way that makes it trefa. So the idea is that the idea is, as we're going to learn throughout the sugya, we'll start today and we'll continue in the next couple of daf in Be'ez Hashem, that the problem is what's called eres. Eres literally means poison. So it means, in other words, there's something from the claws or the talons of the attacking animal that's going to put a poison into the victim. So even if it doesn't kill it, but this poison will gradually spread through its body and kill it. What exactly the nature of that poison is, there's quite a bit of discussion, because we're talking about, for example, wolves and lions and things like that. They don't produce poison or venom, as in like a chemical compound like that that has the properties of like snake venom or whatever. So there is a well-known explanation that Achronim talk about. And it's basically bacteria that get trapped under the predator's claws, especially some of the creatures that we're going to talk about over here have claws that retract into below the surface of the skin. So bacteria and the remains of previous victims can easily build up over there, and then it gets when it claws another animal, then it causes it to get infected with those, and therefore over time that damages the animal's internal organs and causes it to die. So now let's start talking about those dinim. The Mishnah said, "Drusas hazev," if an animal had been clawed by a wolf. So I'm going to be hold on or not, but behemoth has the evil of myla. When it comes to animals, only if the predator is a wolf or larger, then they have the ability to with their clawing to kill the victim, and if not right away. Again, if it kills it right away, it's nevela anyhow. But what we mean is, in other words, to kill it gradually with this poison or venom or whatever you want to call it. But smaller animals than that, yeah, they'll cause it to get infected, but it'll recover. Over oifus, when it comes to birds, when a nates or lamila, then anything larger than a nates is able to, a nates or anything larger is able to make a bird trefa. A nates, we talked about in the Mishnah, can mean a sparrow hawk. Okay. So the Gemara says, l'mu'utimai, as opposed to what? What is Rav coming to exclude for us? So Elaim Lamurti Chosel, does Rav come to tell us, as opposed to a cat? So a cat, for example, is smaller than a wolf, and if it's dirtus, if it attacks an animal, nothing happens. We don't need Rav to be telling us that. Tanena, we said explicitly in the Mishnah, Drusat Azev, only if the animal was clawed by a wolf. V'chitema hokamash malon, you're gonna tell me that Rav's chiddush is that it is a begasa nami dardis, that a wolf is considered enough of a predator that it can affect even a behema gasa, even cattle. But still, from the Mishnah, you might have thought that anything smaller than a wolf could still accomplish drisa with a smaller type of animal, a sheep or a goat, and Rav would be then implying to us that cats are not an issue at all. No, well, it's not, because the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda and drusa sazei v'daka. Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to a wolf, that would be drusa only by a small animal. He holds that a wolf doesn't have the ability to accomplish drusa with cattle, for example, or drusa sabib v'gasa. Only if it was a lion, then Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah would be saying that then it's considered drusa. So the Mishnah is obviously not saying, so the Tanakama is obviously not mentioning wolf according to the Tanakama, who doesn't draw that distinction. So fine, it means a wolf is able to do drusa in a behemoth gasa, and therefore you don't need Rav to be telling us the chiddush that doesn't apply to cats. The chitamer of Yehuda Miflag Polig, you can answer, okay, well, Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Tanakama. The Tanakama would hold that a wolf is able to accomplish drusa with either kind of animal, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying no. But no, va'amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Yefes, amar Rabbi Ila, loy bar Rabbi Yehuda el lefarish direi chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda is coming only to explain what the chachamim said. So there's no machloikus between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. If Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a wolf has power of drisa only with small animals, sheep and goats, then therefore that would be what the Tanakhama means as well. And therefore there's no reason for that would be the point of it. So what is Rav's chiddush to tell us that with a cat that doesn't apply? But the Gemara answers, what's the problem? Gavra, Gavra, Kolomis, pointing out a contradiction between two Amoroyim. Rabbi Yamin bar Yefes holds that Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah is not disagreeing, he's just clarifying. Rav says that no, there's an actual machloikas. Rabbi Yehuda says one way and the Chachamim say the other way. So in other words, the Tanakhama would be saying that, would be mentioning a wolf and saying that applies even to a behemoth gasa, and Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing. Well, very well then, Rav is telling us that nevertheless, the point is, anything smaller than a wolf, such as a cat, is not able to accomplish drusa even by a behemoth daka. There are achronim who understand the Rabbi Yonis and Eibershitz explains in Placey that Yam Shal Shloim and the Maharshal may understand the Gemara to say there's not actually a machlokus between them, but rather between Rav and Rabbi Yonim by Yefes and Rav would agree with Rabbi Yonim by Yefes, but not necessarily the other way around. Fine. So the Gemara says, Iboy Sema, or another answer you could say. You don't have to say that there's a difference of understanding what Rabbi Yehuda means in the Mishnah. You could say, very simple. In fact, when the Mishnah mentions a wolf, it means already as opposed to a cat, and therefore in that case there would be no chiddush in what Rav says. But what is Rav telling us? Still, you would have thought to say, the Mishnah, when it mentions a wolf, doesn't dafka mean a wolf as opposed to anything else. It's just mentioning the typical thing. Usually wolves are predators like that of animals, and therefore, so it's mentioning that, but doesn't necessarily mean to exclude anything smaller, kamash malan, and therefore, according to the second answer, Rav would have to be telling us that no, nevertheless, the fact is a cat is not able with animals to accomplish drusa at all. Even if it does, it claws it and injects some venom or bacteria or whatever, it'll be a small enough amount that the animal can overcome, that the animal that was attacked can overcome it. So we started with the dinim. So we started with the dinim of Durusa, and we'll continue over the next couple of days, Be'ez Hashem. We'll continue talking about these details of Durusa, what kinds of predators are considered to accomplish Durusa and what not, and how do we tell if an animal has in fact undergone Durusa, then how we tell whether it's Tefa or not, and various cases where we're not sure if the predator attacked or not. All of those will be discussed over the next couple of days, Be'ez Hashem.